You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time now for the Rex Ryan Report. It's brought to you by Fidelis Care and Bud Light. Coach, always good to talk to you. I got to begin with some controversy that our guy got into, and you were privy to as well. Because Bart's the guy that was calling out Kyler Murray for some things that he was seeing about him personality-wise and the way he was carrying himself on the sideline. To a point now where everybody in Phoenix hates Bart.
That's
right. He then has that, you know, the throw that he has, and everybody's talking about Miracle Murray and everything else. But would you say it's the catch that was more than anything that made that play?
I just think it was incredible. I mean, guys, that's not even a play design. You know, he's trying to get, because I watched it today, me and Dan Orlovsky watched it today. He's trying to actually get Larry Fitzgerald on a over route, trying to get him to get closer so they can take a shot. But Kyler Murray, we got to give him his props. He sees, I got my guy down there, I'm going to just give it to him, and gave him an opportunity. But you're right, that's like one of the greatest catches ever. It's on top of three guys. I mean, he mocked three guys on the same exact play. And it's just amazing. You see how the strength of the guy's hands, and just, it's just amazing. I mean, it's an incredible throw. But my gosh, the catch was just spectacular.
And just so I can clarify what I'm saying is, I'm not saying what he is or what he isn't right now. What I'm saying is, first sign of trouble. Of course, it's all sunshine and roses, it's newlywed phases. But the way he answers questions when things are relatively well, if things go bad, I don't see him being able to handle, you know, losing and controversy, which we know every NFL player has to face. So they can give him his roses. And I never said he wasn't a great player. What I'm saying is, I don't like his demeanor after losses. I don't like his body language. You need to stand up when you lose and win, shoulders back. I've seen Tom Brady, I've seen Peyton Manning lose Super Bowls and sit up there with pride, and it's a beacon of confidence to his team. Yeah. That, hey, we lost, but this is how you handle losing as well. You know, in this league, you're going to lose just as many. Maybe hopefully you win more than you lose, but when you do lose, you have the same pride and dignity, and you give the reporters the same respect because you're the CEO. Now, if it's a guy like me, Brian Cox, Terrell Suggs going off, that's to be expected. That's not to be expected from the quarterback position. So they can say whatever they want out in Phoenix. First of all, I have no reason to ever visit Phoenix anyway. The best thing about Phoenix is it's close to L.A.
Oh, and you know what's funny is, I know where you're coming from with that. You're right. You're the face of the franchise, whether you want to be or not, and you're the face of the franchise through the good times and the bad times, you and the head coach. It's just part of the gig. But I get it. We've seen that, though. A few of these younger guys, Baker Mayfield was the same way. He kind of, it's like he'd be short with you and quick and
right.
I'm going to get you back or something like that, almost immature like. But it's just what it is. I'm sure he'll grow with it the longer he's the longer he's doing it. But at the same time, the guy's spectacular. We get it as a player. But yeah, there's some things that he's going to grow with, and this happens with younger guys. And look, we understand nobody likes losing. You know what I mean? But you handle it that way and understand that you are the face of the franchise at all times.
Until we're going to get to your son, I'm sure, later in this interview. But when I saw that and I saw DeAndre Hopkins and the amazing catch that he made, and then I watched Action Jackson yesterday, and I'm watching Willie Snead in position to make not a great play, a good play, a play that you expect higher end receivers to make. It just reminds me that Lamar doesn't have have a guy. And we want to compare him and Ryan Clark last week saying he'll take Kyler Murray. If Lamar Jackson was throwing some of those passes that may be inaccurate, maybe off, maybe into triple coverage, a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, Michael Thomas, Evans, we expect to make those catches. What I was saying and what I've been saying is it's unfair for us to judge Lamar because he doesn't have a guy like that to throw to. The guy that he's throwing to like that and he's expecting to come up with 80% of the balls is a tight end. And not since Gronkowski has we seen somebody dominate on a consistent basis with throwing those 50-50 balls in gotta-have-it moments to a tight end. So it's unfair to me when I look out there. I don't even recognize Duvernay, like Boykins. Never. Come on, man. Like, really? So to me, that's what I was saying. So, unfortunately, like today is just going to be more vindication for guys like Ryan Clark that believes that Kyler Murray's special. And maybe he is special, but I don't think he's any more special than Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson has to do more with less than they have to do.
Yeah, I look at it this way, Bart. I think both those kids are special. I mean, look, let's face it, Lamar Jackson won the league MVP last year. So that's pretty dang special. Kyler Murray was taken with the first overall pick because of his special talent. I mean, he's an amazing, guy that way. But you're right, the move that has put Kyler Murray into this spotlight and all that stuff right now is getting Hopkins, because you mentioned having that go-to guy. And, he's in there. Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk, that's fine, decent pieces. But give me a break. When they got Hopkins, they put this team over the top. And it was just a great move, aggressive move of going out and getting them. And obviously, I think the greatest trade in the history for a franchise. It's such a bad trade for Houston. But Lamar Jackson, listen, he's not – this isn't the same team as last year because they lost – yeah, some of the people, they don't have, they don't have that tight end package that was so effective for him last year. And look, Brown's supposed to be your big time receiver. He's so small and he plays small. He wants the darn football. Well, guess what, dude? How about you grow like 3 inches or something like that? Because he is hard to find. And you saw where Lamar tried to force the issue. And look, Lamar is not a guy that throws with touch. He's got to throw it more on the line. And this is not a great combination. I think Lamar needs bigger targets. And when he has those guys, he can be really effective. And we saw it all last year. That's why he won the league MVP.
We're talking with Rex Ryan, as we do each week at this time. And Rex, with that in mind, and you obviously Hopkins is an amazing target, an amazing skill set to have with a young quarterback. Somebody you can just throw it up and he can make the play, especially the one like he made yesterday at the end of that game. And right before that, you saw just Stephon Diggs, another great pickup in the offseason. A young quarterback in Josh Allen can rely on a guy like that who's been great this year, a pickup like that. How important is it? When you had a very young quarterback like Mark Sanchez, you guys had a veteran group around him. Is that the way you have to do it? When you have a young quarterback and you feel the urge, all right, we took him very high in the draft, we've got to play him right away. The importance of making sure that he's got veteran skill set around him. How important is that, and how important was that for you guys with Mark Sanchez?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, look, we never thought that, well, just because he's a high pick, we got to play him right now. We had nobody else. That was why he ended up winning that deal. And, we had Kellen Clemens, whatever. But trust me, had nobody else.
Clint Lemon.
So he won the job, right? Job. And when we started that season, we started off 3-0. And, we had Jericho Cotchery was our number one receiver. And then we had Chance, the Stucky kid out of Clemson, was a guy. And we ended up trading him in a Braylon Edwards trade. But, yeah, if we could upgrade, that's great. But... and it's hard to win, obviously, with young quarterbacks in the league. But, there's an opportunity that you have to get a special talent, obviously that's going to help any quarterback, and especially a guy like DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins is so good at contested throws, and that's what it is. And, in those situations, you want to help a guy? Let him go out there. Throw up, as they say, quote-unquote, the 50-50 ball. No such thing with DeAndre Hopkins. That's way in his favor. Same thing with a Mike Evans or somebody like that. But I think that's what you do. And you saw what was the piece that was missing for Buffalo. They wanted that go-to receiver. It's going to make Brown better. The other receiver is going to make Cole Beasley better. Having that go-to guy. And they can complement each other. Well, look at how Josh Allen's playing this year. Yep. I mean, he is in that MVP conversation, a young quarterback, and how that's elevated him. We see it with Kyler Murray, how he's elevated by Hopkins. So, yeah, anytime you get an opportunity like that, you go out and take it, especially if you think you're one or two guys away.
All right, let's get to who Bart calls your son. What did you see from the Giants? What did you see from Danny Dimes, Daniel Jones in this game? We saw really more of the same, except for another game, no turnovers. Is that really all it takes for Daniel Jones to prove he could be a franchise quarterback?
Yeah, Daniel Jones is a special talent, and people are ridiculous they don't see it. His only negative is the fact that he would turn the ball over, that he's got to learn how to protect the football. And that way it protects the team. We've seen him do a nice job of that these last couple of weeks. But he's got arm talent to be special. He's got athleticism to be special. And he's got toughness to be special. So that's what's, you know, that's all it takes. And as fans, we want it right away. Well, hell, how about we have a left tackle that's not a turnstile? How about we have, you know, other things around him? He doesn't have a bona fide guy. Hell, tell me his bona fide guy. You know, Ingram finally made some catches, but he's had a ton of drops, too. So we're seeing it. The thing I was most impressed with the Giants was this. Joe Judge, the night before, I was going to take the Eagles in the game. I picked the Giants because I knew they would come out inspired. He showed a tape to his players about showing enthusiasm, passion, those type of things to his players, and how much he appreciated that. That's who we are. He talked about that's who we are, not who they are. This is, you know, it's a we thing. It's you're my players. And that's the thing. And I think because I hate when he's, you know, Joe Hart, you know, hard butt or whatever, Joe Badass. When he just showed them that how much he appreciated them. And that, to me, he won this team over. And watch what happens the end of this at the string. Watch how good this team plays. And I think it's all because this guy picked this spot. You know, I never saw it coming, and I'm sure that team didn't see it coming. Well, now that it's happened, he kind of, you know, it's like, hell, I kind of get where he's going. I kind of get where Coach is going. And I see him in a different light, much more respectful than I did in the past.
Well, Rex, I think Joe Judge is, when you do things like that, you reveal to your players your heart. Like, you can be a hard ass all you want, but then when you reveal your heart, you can say he's a hard ass, but he's our hard ass, and we're going to ride for him. But when you reveal your heart like you did, I thought that was the key to you. You revealed your heart, that you cared, not just about, you know, the wins or losses, but you cared about the individual. And when you do that and you say, hey, man, I feel like my leader is in the foxhole with me. He's not somewhere on the top of the mountaintop, you know, walkie-talkie and then commands. He's down here with us. He's shooting behind us. He got our six. And when you do that, then you have something special. And listen, it ain't about the most talented team. The most talented team won't win this division. It's the team that plays the hardest, and it's the team that buys in. Because as you have these ups and downs and these ebb and flows of a season, what happens is you have guys that jump off the ship. And it's, I'm sure it's still a couple of guys. Golden Tate was one of those guys a week ago. That kind of point. And if he didn't either get on board and get in line and didn't apologize to the team, then he's a guy that you look to move. Not because, even if you have to eat some salary cap, because you have to have guys that believe in the system and believe in what you're trying to build and not see where you're at, but see where you're going. And sometimes you have a veteran player like Golden Tate, they don't see that. So you have to get off of that and get rid of them. Much like you got rid of Abe Elam. You got rid of the defensive tackle that you sent to Cleveland as well. Not that he would have been a problem, but he just a two-gap guy. You got to get guys that believed in your system and how you did things, because some guys had already been brainwashed. Some guys are brainwashed by the previous regimes and previous coaches and always saying, hey, that I want to do it like we used to do it. No, this is a different thing. You do it the way we do it. We do it differently here. And sometimes it's hard to reprogram some guys, you know, that's been so hardwired that they hard to be able to erase their memory bank. You know, I want to go also. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, and you're exactly right. And that's some of the thing, because you want to do it too, coaches included. Like, when you have some carryover coaches, Are they going to buy in or not? Mike Westhoff, is he going to buy in? Is, you know, Brian Schottenheimer? Well, I just knew they were quality coaches and quality people. And that's all I needed. And then I was going to show them my enthusiasm, my passion, and the way I've, you know, and I kept them. It's not easy to do. But I looked at it as like, oh, no, these guys are damn good coaches. But when I met them, I knew they were my kind of guys. And they fit right in. We brought in guys on defense. Why? We had you, Jim Leonard, and Marquise Douglas.
Yep.
And those are the three guys we needed. Now, when you look at it, on paper, we also lost 9 players on defense. From a defense that was 23rd in the league, we flipped it overnight. We did it because we had 100% buy-in. And it started with you players, you three guys, coming in there, Bart. And I never had to do anything. You guys were, hey, listen, trust me. If you just buy in, we're going to get this done. And it happened.
Now, when I look at Daniel Jones and everybody, you know, he has his warts, right? And they all do, especially young quarterbacks. When I look at him, and I've always looked at him, when I see him, I see Josh Allen with more touch on the football. I think he has as equally a strong arm. I think he has more touch to do the intermediate throws. But I think one of the most underrated parts of his game is the fact that he can run the football. I mean, he's pulling away from guys. He has one of the fastest runs this year. And yesterday, again, 9 for 64 yards, people keep disrespecting him because the narrative is that he's some goofy dope in the middle of the pocket like Eli Manning. But he's far from that. He's Eli in his alternate universe, Eli Manning. Because he's more athletic
dynamic,
than people think.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they look at him, he's the old shucks in the khakis, and they think that he just...
Well, he's a modern... I guess he's more of the modern quarterback, though, but with Eli's, you know, personality and demeanor, which all that stuff, I guess, does kind of work together. Do you agree with that parallel there, Ray?
Yeah. Well, exactly. Here's the thing we're forgetting on him that most people are sleeping on, and Bart, you bring it up. This dude is a phenomenal athlete. And that's what people don't get. Get it over your head. This guy is a phenomenal athlete. And the other thing is, the best thing he brings, there's two things, competitiveness and toughness. And that's what I saw when I saw him coming out of Duke. And that's why I loved him when he was coming out of Duke.
Sometimes taking some L's in college is a good thing, man. You know, all the L's I took in college made me a better player because I was used to playing without guards that can peep with guards in my face all the time. Last one I want to get to because I look at all week I was able to do national TV and I screamed from the high heavens that the problem in Tampa was the fact that they needed to come and settle on a personnel grouping. And I believe that Tom Brady's best personnel grouping was two tight ends and running the ball through Ronald Jones. Man, do I look like a genius today, because Ronald Jones, 23 carries for almost 200 yards, and Tom Brady leads the league with 11 touchdowns. I know he probably added to it yesterday with two tight ends on the field with 11 touchdown passes. I think they have to find a way to find Antonio Brown's snaps, but I think they should settle on the two tight end set, which is the hardest to defend, especially when you have two tight ends that can receive the football.
Yeah, that's a great point, and it definitely works for them because those tight ends can block, too. If you're just bringing out there, hey, he's a tight end, but he can't block, that doesn't help you. So in this case, you're exactly right with that group. But a stat today that I talked about is when you're balanced, when Tom Brady, his offense is balanced, he's almost unbeatable. 75-2 is Brady's record. When his team runs for 35 rushing attempts or more in a game. That's what ticked me off so bad the week before about, what do you got, no clue? Do you not realize that? You know, Tampa Bay, when they only had 3 real rushing attempts in a game, absolutely ridiculous. But when they are more balanced, that team could beat anybody. And all those weapons that we've talked about, Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Gronk, Braid, you know, Godwin, all those guys are going to show up when you run the football. Play action shows up. All of a sudden, your offensive line looks like they can protect the quarterback. And it all starts because you're committed to running the football and being balanced on offense.
Rex, we're going to leave it right there. Great stuff as always. Good to talk to you. Thanks.
All right, my pleasure, guys. Look forward to it next week.
Add basketball now to the menu, along with the NFL, which is heading towards, obviously, their big part of the season, which is now make or break time after all the buys are finished. as the Giants go on one right now. The Jets come off one right now. And you have about 7 weeks left in the season to see what happens in the NFL. So sports still a big part of what we do and what we listen to and what we pay attention to. And certainly Michael Kay's show is part of that as well. They have the 20 and 20 contest that continues today at 3 o'clock. So listen for your chance at 20 great prizes over 20 days to make your home life a little more enjoyable. For today, the guys are giving away this thing we talk about all the time, the Bartesian. It's a home cocktail maker that automatically draws from your chosen spirits and dispenses a premium cocktail at the touch of a button in seconds. When you're watching the Jets, that could be a really nice thing to have at your disposal, wouldn't it? It's the 20 and 20 contest brought to you by PC Richard and Son, Kansas City Steak, yes, the Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand, and 98.7 ESPN. Before we get to audio files, shall we get to a call or two? Let's take James in Spring Valley. James, we wanted to make you want it.
Oh, my God. You got me. You got me. I mean, I wanted it so badly. First off, Alan, thank you for taking my call. If you want to join the Giants bandwagon, there's room for one more, man. There's room for one more.
I'm just watching. I'm admiring from afar. That's the best I can do.
I appreciate that. So I got to ask about Dave Gettleman's job status. And I'm happy about the Giants' wins, but the more the wins keep coming, the more I get scared that he will be back, and I don't want him back. He has not proven that he's coming back. But listen, I'll take the wins. The Giants haven't had these wins in feels like forever, and I'm happy as a fan. But the more the Giants keep winning games, the more it's not a foregone conclusion that Dave Gettleman doesn't come back. I feel like if they win, then he's getting wins in the bank that justifies him staying as GM of the Giants, and that kind of scares me.
Bart, you keep saying you don't think it's going to matter.
It should matter. I mean, I don't think it matters. I think, you know, they understand that Dave Gettleman's time as general manager is up with the Giants, and, you know, they want to move into the future. Judge represents a future, a young guy that, you know, can be on the job if he continues to perform at a high level. Then, you know, he can be there for a long time. Maybe he can be there, Tom Coughlin, a 10-15-year answer. Gettleman's not a 10 to 15 year answer, so it's better to make that decision and make that transition at the beginning of Joe Judge's career than the end. You know, you don't want to do it mid-season. You want to get somebody that's comfortable with him, because this team is still at the beginning where it's trying to be molded and shaped like glue. And now you want somebody that can be on the same accord and have the same philosophies and belief, you know, about how to build a team and how to build a winner.
It's going to be interesting to see what the Giants do, but obviously we still have to see how they finish this season, because a lot can change in these last couple of weeks here. But we're already seeing that Daniel Jones is starting to, again, show us reasons to believe in him. That also, Joe Judge, the guy that we all were like, who are they hiring? A guy that's never been a head coach before, off the Belichick tree, special teams coach. What kind of hire is this? They could have gotten Mike McCarthy. They could have gotten Matt Rhule. They could have gotten somebody with experience. They go with this guy. Why? Well, I'll tell you what. What we're seeing is the reasons why. And we feel like this guy is showing you he can coach. Good for them, certainly, for that. All right, we'll get back to the calls again, keeping an eye on NBA trade stuff and everything going on in the NFL. But right now, we've got audio files.
The audio file.
So, Bart, I mean, there were a lot of very interesting games over the weekend on Sunday, but no game had anyone gripped like Cardinals 32, Bills 30 on a buzzer beater, literally. Kyler Murray throwing that pass to DeAndre Hopkins in the end zone, and Hopkins high-pointing this thing against three defenders and making sure you could see the Jordan brand logo on his glove. Is that a moss? He got dunked on?
That's a moss.
That's a posterized kind of move, wasn't it?
That's a moss.
That's definitely a moss, right? As Rex called it that certainly as well. Well, now, Kyler Murray basically was about just fine D-Hop, and he'll take care of the rest. DeAndre Hopkins offered his thoughts while the ball was in the air.
Coming down with it, that's what I'm thinking about. You know, I try not to panic. I never panic when the ball is in the air. You know, I stay calm, being calm, going up and doing what I do. I know I have an advantage of jumping higher than some DBs, especially, with my hands. I know that if I can get my hands on the ball, I'm coming down with it. So the only thing for me is just, trying to get a feel for the ball so, I can come down and, grip it best I can so no one gets it out.
Now, is he just talking there, or is that really what goes on in your mind in that short few seconds as you're waiting to make a catch like that?
Yeah, I would assume that you're just waiting for the chance and making sure that you time your jump up. The problem is the defender's on his back and in front. You saw one defender jump too early. The receiver, because he gets to the point, and Kyler put it right on him. And he's a guy that has strong hands. Usually, somebody you see people with that, they never get a chance to bring the ball to their body. But he was able to high point it, but then pull his hands quickly to his body. That's the hard part, because if he'd kept it out there, and then would have went, had to go through the arms of the defender. And listen, it's just a tremendous route. We see these every once in a while. The last time we seen one, and I know a lot of people compared it, we saw Megatron, I think he did it to the Cincinnati Bengals, where he mossed, three people at the same time, was able to time and jump, high pointed. And it's all about time, and it's all about depth perception as well. Being able to, that's a skill set to understand where the ball's going to be and know when to time your jump, especially when it's coming like a moonshot, when you're facing the moonshot, not running, away from it with your back to it. When you see it coming, knowing how to time it up and high point it. A lot of guys losing in the lights. A lot of guys don't see it because they're nervous and they're panicking. He didn't panic.
Is that low? I mean, how much luck is involved in a catch like that?
I mean, it's luck, because that ball's a couple inches too short or not there, then that defender knocks it down, and then it's different, not able to high point it. So, I mean, we saw like when Aaron Rodgers had the fail Mary, but Aaron Rodgers does a good job of it. It's 85% luck. You just hope you get one where you can take advantage of it. He'll probably never catch, or maybe if he's lucky to catch another two in his career, then that'd be great. But, the guys don't really catch those on purpose.
Still, though, it was pretty amazing catch and strong grip. Vice grips to make a catch, certainly like that. Meanwhile, as we move around the league, Detroit with a walk-off as well. Matt Prater, a 59-yard field goal as the Lions get their, first home win of the season. Washington loses again, even though, as you said, they are very competitive. And Alex Smith, again, another terrific game for him. Washington made this wild comeback, almost was able to pull it off. But there was a big play late in this game, and that involved the young player in Chase Young. And he, if you watch it, he gets a roughing the passer. He kind of shoves Matthew Stafford. And Matthew Stafford might have flopped, might not have flopped. I don't know. But it allowed to set up for the field goal. That penalty was able to move the ball just enough to get them within that field goal range. You could argue it back and forth. It wasn't the smartest play by the rookie. Here's Ron Rivera going back and forth with the reporter about that penalty.
Well, he hit him too hard, I guess. I mean, they hit our guy, knocked him to the ground. We didn't get a penalty, so just a little inconsistent.
Ron, what do you say to Chase Young? Is that basically a teachable moment for the rookie in a sense?
It is, because the quarterbacks are treated extra special, so we have to be aware of that.
Did you see the play, Bard? Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like kind of a two-hand shove.
It didn't
seem terrible, but it was unnecessary as well.
Yeah, and sometimes young defenders got to understand the point of the game where you just can't err on the side. You got to err on the side of caution because you're looking for an opportunity to do that. So that's always discouraging, when those things happen. But you got to understand that you're a rookie going against a really, really good quarterback, a Pro Bowl or a franchise quarterback. And, you're not going to win that battle. He's going to get those calls.
All right, move on to the Browns winning 10-7 against the Texans. And I mean, unsightly game, would you say? The Browns do improve.
I love those type of games. I mean, to me,
you do, because you're a defensive player.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that was built on a run game. You think about Nick Chubb coming back, first week being down for 4 weeks, to be able to run for over 100 yards, and then for Kareem Hunt behind him to be able to run for over 100 yards. They may look ugly, but that's a recipe to win in the playoffs if you're able to pack that type of running game where you can get over 200 yards and you got fresh backs that can continue to kind of wear teams down. You win those games late in the game. That's a recipe for playoff success.
Well, you also, you would love this too, defensively, where Myles Garrett just absolutely was a beast in this game. Six tackles, two for a loss in the game, and had a half sack, which moved him to 40 sacks, the fastest player to 40 career sacks in Browns history in that game. Baker Mayfield didn't have to do a lot in this game. The defense certainly handled most of it, but afterwards, Baker Mayfield had this to say about Garrett.
I think Miles took the approach of, you know, real G's move in silence like lasagna.
What?
Who said that?
That would be Baker Mayfield.
Come on, man. Like, and you're trying too hard to be too cool. You come off like
you
a
get
cornball.
It right. G in lasagna is silence, so real G's move in silence.
Yeah, that's a rap song. But he's still in a rap song. Like, come on,
right,
man.
I know. Yeah, that's where it comes from. But it's
yeah,
just,
like yeah, you know, I feel you. But
would
yeah.
you say that's corny?
It's corn. It's cornballish. It's forced.
Mm.
It didn't flow. It's not fluent. You know what I mean?
Not loving that, are you?
He's cornball, man.
I mean, he's trying, I guess. But it's
I'm
just,
saying, but like he's ultra uber confident. Like what I'm saying yeah. is, I need that same confidence.
That's a dad joke. What he just did there is a dad joke.
Yeah, exactly.
Baker did a dad joke. This is what happens when you start making the commercials that you're making. You kind of lose yourself a little bit. And like that's a dad joke. That's a joke I would make to my kids, and they'd give me the same groan that you just did. Like,
but I said before that I thought that they were the wild card team. Now they're going to have to hash it out between either Tennessee or Indianapolis, and who knows, maybe even New England. You know, if they're able to get on a run, I don't know. I'm just saying they're technically still alive,
or even maybe Miami.
Or Miami, yeah.
Miami's very much in things, right?
So Miami, Cleveland, Baltimore, and Indianapolis is in a race for the wild cards. And if they get in, those are all teams that can upset a favorite.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're just commenting on the joke.
That's all
we're doing is just making the case that that's a dad joke, Baker, and you're way too young to do dad jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
Last but not least, not that anything's wrong with dad jokes. I make them all the time. Over the weekend was the Masters through rain and everything else, but it's obviously still the fact that they were able to get this tournament in, even though it's in the fall, it was still special. Dustin Johnson wins a record-breaking performance. Didn't get off to the best start, but it was his first green jacket. It meant certainly a lot to him. Now, side note, Tiger Woods had one of his awful rounds, one of his worst. He had a 10 on the 12th where he was doing the tin cup thing. It just kept going in the water, and he just kept going. It was tough to watch Tiger there. But Tiger won last year, so he's the one that has to now pass on the green jacket to Dustin Johnson. And you saw Tiger's face as he did it. And for Dustin Johnson, however, it might have been tough for Tiger to be there, but for him, it meant a lot to have Tiger put that jacket on him.
Yes. I mean, yeah, obviously having Tiger put it on was awesome and unbelievable. And, you know, you wouldn't want it any other way. But if any guy could put it on me, and I'd be just fine.
I mean, I guess it doesn't matter, right? It's like who hands you the trophy. Yeah. I don't care as long as I get the trophy. But, I mean, Tiger being as special as he is, and a lot of the younger golfers really looked up to him.
Yeah, he was an inspiration.
It means something. It does mean something special. But I don't know if you saw any of the highlights, though, of that one hole where it was hard to watch. Where Tiger is right now.
He was cussing at him. But the crazy thing is, where he is right now, he won it last year. It's like crazy.
Well, I know, but I know. I guess you're right. It's not a typical year for anyone, but I don't know. There's something. Maybe it's something
that. Yeah, we always think because like him and Phil Mickelson, he's younger than Phil, and Phil's still playing.
Right.
But it's like you think that Tiger's never going to get there. It's kind of like watching Serena now. It's like, man, it's always something. She gets close, and we think we have all these high expectations for her.
Just one more,
and she's starting to let us down.
So like, man, one just more is all you keep saying, but you wonder, can it happen? And for Tiger, is it two more now,
especially,
right?
Like, yeah, especially with that Larry Bird back, man.
It's tough. Sucks getting old, man.
Don't get old.
It sucks.
Yeah, I'm trying to get some HGH. I mean, because you think about the field's getting better, and the more and more these guys come of age, the less and less intimidated they are by Tiger. So that was always, I thought, one of his biggest advantages. But the fact that they knew Tiger would come on and surge late. And now they like, you know what? That's an old man. It's kind of like when I got in the league and, like, Barry Sanders was my idol. And it's like, man, I knocked the hell out of Barry Sanders.
Let's go. get a little extra money in your pocket.
Cheese and sour cream on the taco.
This is Lunch Money.
And Lunch Money is driven by your local Lexus dealer. Lexus ES now available with all-wheel drive, giving you control and confidence to take on almost anything. Experience amazing. See your Lexus dealer. Bart, I gotta be honest with you. The spread tonight, so Monday Night Football, Vikings at Bears, and the Vikings who are 3-5, and the Bears who actually have a winning record, although we know that that's precarious. It's the Vikings who are favored by 3.5 here.
I mean, that's because Dalvin Cook, man. And it's weird because Dalvin Cook never does well against that Bears defense, which is really good. You know, I mean, Dalvin Cook's been, you know, he's on a tear. Last two games, he's rushed for over 200 yards. You know, that hasn't been done since Le'Veon Bell when he was with the Steelers. So they're going to have to try and, you know, settle him down. But, you know, it's interesting. But that's the only reason I can really consider why it's, you know, why they're the favorite. Because this kid's been on a tear that we haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, and that's why when we do our daily fantasy for tonight's game, again, it's Monday Night Football, and it's Vikings at Bears. We'll take Dalvin Cook at the top of the list there as our MVP. After that, we'll go more Minnesota, heavy Minnesota in this game for us, too, on our team. So Dalvin Cook, MVP. Then you got Thielen, Cousins, and Rudolph. Rudolph's going to get a lot more targets with Irv Smith out, so we feel good about Rudolph. And then Cordell Patterson will be the guy for us from Chicago. Here's why. David Montgomery's out, and they're going to use Patterson more as a running back in this game.
Well, they've done that before for people out there who are not familiar with Patterson. Patterson's a punt returner. He came in. He was a high draft pick, but he really just hasn't panned out. But he's such a big physical presence. He's 220 pounds. They do him a lot on jet sweeps. Mm-hmm. Them putting him in the backfield is not like a slight on the other backfield running backs.
Yeah.
I'm saying on the other running backs on the roster, he's just special when he gets his ball in his hands. He's big enough to be able to run through the tackles, not just a perimeter runner.
All right, let's get to this quickly. Doug Peterson was just on WIP down in Philly, his weekly spot, and you've got to hear the way this began. Doug Peterson, after losing to the Giants, not happy.
Who do you blame the most for the Eagles' 10-point loss to the Giants? 72% coaching.
Head coach of the Eagles, Doug Peterson. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, Angelo. Thanks for the lead-in. I appreciate that.
I'm sorry.
That was awesome. That just puts me in a great mood today. Already in a good mood. I appreciate it.
I kind of felt you probably wouldn't be in a good mood.
Can I hang up now?
No, please don't, Doug.
I'm feeling my obligation right now. If I hang up, I feel my obligation.
Doug, I fully understand.
I'm pissed off, Angelo.
Come on. What about Doug? He follows up by saying that he's mad at himself and said that he's mad. He pissed off the way we played. It frustrates me. Frustrated to no end. And he just talked about how we have too much pride. We work all week, and it's frustrating. Blame me all you want. That's fine. But we're self-inflicting ourselves. We're killing ourselves, shooting ourselves in the foot, all the cliche statements that are showing up, and it's frustrating. And, Bart, clearly if you're the Eagles, I mean, with the way that division looks, I mean, they should be running away with this thing, and it's embarrassing. So we only have a few seconds here left in the show, but, Bart, you could just hear it in Doug Peterson's voice.
Yeah, man. I mean, because, you know, he feels it slipping away. And he knows even if they do get to the playoffs, what is that going to say about this team? He knows what's coming. He knows that $64 million over the cap. He knows that, you know, they're going to be breaking his team up. And he.
Right, let me jump. I'm sorry, Bart. Let me just jump in here because we only have a few seconds left. Woj keeps saying, though, there's no major trade talks going on with the Nets in Houston right now for Harden. So we'll see where it goes. Bart, I'll see you tomorrow.
I'll holla.
Don't miss Bart Scott and Alan Hahn. Weekdays at 11 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.